Hey there! Welcome to Dogs Are Smarter Than People, the quirky podcast that brings you writing tips and life tips. I'm Sean, and with me, as always, is Carrie Jones, New York Times and international best-selling author and awesome woman.
I'm also Sean's wife, so he has to say that. We always start our podcast with a random thought, and then we go into the writing tip and the dog tip. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Enjoy!
Hey, it's random thought.
Hey, baby.
Hey, man.
In the office time. Come on.
I don't have any energy today, man. It's 6 o'clock. Almost 7.
It's almost 7.
I am done, man. It's dark out. It's depressing.
That is depressing.
My seasonal affective disorder has kicked in, according to our daughter. I forget every year I have that.
On a cloudy day, it's almost dark at like 3:30. It sucks.
But apparently, according to Yahoo Life News, I'm not the only one suffering. Right now.
How are you suffering with
love? Well, because according to Kristen Martin's article, why couples are having less sex during the pandemic and what they can do to change it.
What?
Yes.
Are we having less sex during the pandemic? Yeah, we are.
That was such a long
pause. Well, then I remembered I was so proud of what we used to do. I wanted to keep a daily log.
Yeah, he did. He wanted to keep a daily log of fornication.
And now I was like,
I can
just keep a weekly log in my head nowadays.
Oh, that's really sad. Okay, so apparently the Kinsey Institute had a study.
It's because we don't get to do anything fun.
Sex and relationships in the time of COVID-19.
Yeah.
And they had 1,200 people in the study, and half of them are having less sex.
Huh.
And apparently, everybody's pretending like, ooh, there's going to be a baby boom because nobody's doing anything, right? But it's bull. And, like, people are even not having sex with themselves as much.
Oh, you mean self-stimulation, huh?
There you go. And apparently they think that it might be like, you know, there's just no space anymore. You're with each other 24/7. Like, there's no mystery.
I think that's a huge part of it.
What?
Well, because, like I said, we've been on this plateau for so long. You know what I mean?
The COVID plateau?
Yeah, that and some other adjustments in our life in the last couple of years just have us so busy doing the same thing day after day. And part of our life before COVID was travel.
Yeah.
A big part of it.
And it's really hard to be spontaneous.
And you really got to rejuvenate batteries. Doesn't make you a bad person.
Well, a lot of it apparently is that it's hard to be spontaneous. So you're stuck with your partner 24/7 and everybody's like feeling like a big fat sludge.
Well, I don't feel like that.
I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
Like, I got to tell you what, I definitely haven't, you know, tried to toss you up on the dining room table or...
What?
Anything like we used to do like
that's
that.
Because you look at me and you think I'm a big fat
slob. No, never anything that long.
But apparently,
anytime soon.
A lot of people are feeling super self-conscious about their body image, and once you feel that way, it's a lot harder to like be like, hoomba, hoomba. Hoomba, hoomba. It's my noise for that, apparently. And then the more stressed and anxious you are, the lower your, you know, hoomba, hoomba desires are, you know? Yeah. So, there you go.
Yeah, man.
And especially if you have kids in the house, cough, cough, us 2 years, like, it's harder, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's harder, but not harder. Ha!
Oh, that was good.
I know, it took you forever for that.
I'm sorry. My apologies. That was a good joke there.
Shifting gears about things taking forever. Ripley's, Believe It or Not, has a recent article. And it's basically like, hey, you remember when you were a kid, people, like my mom was like, if you swallowed that gum, it's going to be in your belly for 7 years.
Yep.
Did that happen?
I don't know. But it must have not have happened, because if that was true, then all that gum you swallowed would just pile up down there.
I know. Can you imagine? You'd never be hungry because you'd just be full of gum. So anyways, The sweeteners in gum are normal and blah, 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 and you can totally digest it. But the gum base itself, allegedly, is indigestible, right?
Like a piece of corn.
Yes, but modern gum is made with synthetic stuff, so it helps, like, speed up the manufacturing process, right? And so then...
Does it also speed up the demanufacturing process?
One of the two main types of fiber, insoluble fiber, is like not digestible, but it's fine to eat, and they want you to eat it because then it makes your poopy.
Better?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, it says it's released through your stool.
Right. So basically, when you swallow, according to Ripley's, once you swallow gum, it'll go to your small intestine.
Yeah.
Then it'll like absorb sugars and nutrients, and just like fiber and nuts and seeds, right?
Yeah.
And then it goes into your colon, and then it leaves your body when you make a big poopy.
So swallow away, right?
No, you shouldn't do it. Like, there's nothing good in it for you, right? Like, you could block your intestine if you swallow too much blood, and that's going to really suck, because then you're going to have to go to the hospital, and everybody in the hospital has COVID, and there will be no room for you. So don't swallow your gum, but no, or at least not too much of it. But yeah. No, that is not going to be in your belly for 7 years. Did you ever hear... The other thing, like, where you'll have bad luck for 7 years if you break a mirror, or the one that my mother would never shut up about when I was a child, which was, if you shave your hair when you're little, it's going to grow back really dark and thick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever get that?
I heard that.
Yeah.
But not about me. I never tried to shave anything until I was old enough to shave my face.
I was always like, can I shave my legs? And my mom was like, you have no hair on your legs. If you start shaving, it's going to come back thick. You're going to be like a gorilla. That's what she said.
About the same time in my life, well, I heard the gum thing for, you know, you heard that for 20 freaking years.
Yeah.
From the time you were born till the time you were, 18. You know what I mean?
People, yeah.
I was just saying that you heard it.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't being said directly to you, it was being said to a younger niece or nephew.
Yeah.
But regardless, when I think I was when I was in middle school, there was a very similar urban legend type, this 100% myth.
Yeah.
That spread around through us young, barely pubescent males.
Oh, no.
Somebody swallowed enough word that sounds like gum. Basically, it would fill up their stomach and stuff because the body couldn't process it all that well.
I never heard that.
I was going to ask you if, as a girl,
as a girl in New England, that is not something I ever heard in my entire life.
Maybe it's just in my stupid neighborhood.
Probably. And you know what I did hear, though? I heard that if you swallowed a watermelon seed, you'd grow a watermelon in you.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I heard
that's
that
a lot more believable than you really fill it up with
other stuff.
Globulous substance.
I also heard that, like, if you have Pop Rocks and Coke, your belly will explode.
Blow up. Yeah.
I tried that because
you tried because you were that kind of. Did you wear a helmet at least?
No, I didn't. I'm like, if I'm gonna die, I'm gonna go out proud. I'll save the rest of you. And they all watch. Nothing happened.
Well, it doesn't happen if you eat Mentos and then drink Pepsi or whatever they mix together and make.
That makes the sparks.
No.
That's not the spark.
No, Mentos makes a gas. That's.
Oh. No, I didn't do that.
No.
Damn. I missed an opportunity.
I think it must have something to do with acids in the stomach or something.
Yeah, that makes me... You know why we don't have sex as much?
What?
This is sexy talk right here.
Oh, well, you know I give you real sexy talk at night.
Oh, dear Lord.
Writing tip of the paw.
So, keeping on that sexy theme, this week we're going to talk about the sexy opening scene. Right?
Yeah.
So, as a writer, the beginning of your book is really important.
Yeah, man.
People don't like the beginning of the book, they're not going to keep reading.
That's right.
And as an author, you want to have the people to keep reading your book, so they'll buy more of your books. You're going to make noise as you drink that.
A lot less than what you just been telling me I was going to.
Oh, really? All right. not sexy. So you're writing a book, and that book has to start somewhere. Where does it start? That's the opening scene in fancy writer terms, right? And that little baby has a lot of work that it has to do. It's like the first moments of a blind date, but instead of a blind date between two people, it's a blind date between a book and the reader. And you're like,
will they like each other? Dun, dun, dun. Will they want to spend time together? Are they meant for each other?
Only. It's really, will the reader like the book? Because nobody cares that the book likes the reader. The reader has all the power. And that's why that doesn't really work as a metaphor.
Oh, did you make that one up?
No, everybody uses it, I think. Oh, it doesn't really work.
Not at all.
No,
all
right. So, according to Les, that's me being like, sticking in like, all the others.
Will the reader drag you to his van or not?
Yeah, pretty much. So, according to Les Edgerton, who wrote The Craft Book Hooked, that opener, that beginning scene, has 10 important components that's meant to grab the reader's attention and make them want to chill on the couch or in the van with your book, right?
There's 10 of these things?
There's 10, but we don't...
No, I want to do them all. I want to know everything.
Wow, that's a lot of, like, positivity right there.
Oh, I was just kidding, because I want to know everything I can about sexy opening scenes. Or sexy closing scenes.
All right, the first one is the inciting incident.
Les believes that this needs to happen in the first scene.
Other people do not believe this.
What?
Yeah, it's actually a really big deal. So the inciting incident is what happens to make your protagonist change and to take action in the story, right? So if your inciting incident, like Les wants it to be, is on the first page, you never get to hook up and care about that character. So, like, I have a tendency, because in my initial first drafts, I write really fast. And I don't like doing the setups because I'm impatient. I just want to get to the sexy part of the story. But I have to make the beginning sexy, too. And in order to do that, you have to, in the very beginning, according to everybody else, like, save the cat. It's like 10% in to 25% in is where you put your inciting incident. So, like, in order to care about what the reader, the main character is about to do, you have to care about the main character. And how do you do that if it's on the first page?
I gotcha. Makes sense.
So there's a little bit of disagreement over that. So that's the first thing, the inciting incident. There's
some connection going there.
Yeah. So then the second thing is a cough. Yeah. What's the second thing, Bae?
The story-worthy problem.
So the inciting incident, according to Les, makes a problem that's going to propel the plot of the whole damn book, right?
Yep.
That's why it's inciting. And in order to care about what happens to the character has to have a problem that, as a reader, you're like, are they going to, like, solve the problem? Are they not going to solve the problem? And then there also needs to be the initial shallow problem.
This problem happens because of the inciting incident. It makes the protagonist do something, take action, but it's not the real problem of the story.
And sometimes the real problem of the story is Carrie has no self-esteem and is depressed and has no purpose in life. But the story-worthy problem, the initial shallow problem might be, oh, nobody showed up at Carrie's writing workshop today. How can she fix that?
Right.
So, like, that's the different levels of those problems.
Will she be able to fix it or will she not?
Will she stop being a teacher? Will her dog stop making noise? These are the questions. All right, then the next one is...
the setup.
So this kind of makes the reader know what's going to happen next, but also helps the reader know what the heck is going on. So the setup is like, the like what's going on in the story? Like, you know, hey, Carrie's an author sitting and teacher sitting in her office, and she's crying. That would be the setup.
Well, it seems strange to me that the setup comes after.
No, these are all supposed to happen at the same time, kind of.
Oh.
In that opening scene.
What?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. All right, so then there's the backstory.
You do not want a lot of this, which is the events that have happened before the story starts.
Right. And then there are the opening lines.
Because, duh. The story has to start. You want them to be snazzy and make an impression.
Yeah. And then language.
Because again, duh, books are made of words. The words you choose and how you group them together make an impression upon right. your reader.
Right. So the language that you choose and the style and your sentence structure is going to tell the reader what kind of book it is, you know, what age group it is. Like, mm-hmm. it's going to, like, give them, ooh, some hints about what's going on, right?
Yeah.
And then what's next, baby?
The setting.
Because the story has to take place somewhere. Let the reader have a sense of physical space, the time, and the culture. And finally, foreshadowing.
This is the magic, my friends. Because this is part of the hook that keeps the reader with you. The knowledge and hint that something is coming up next.
Right? So those, are, according to Les, are the 10 elements that you want in your opening scene. And the opening scene also has goals, according to him. The goals are...
Number one, you have to hook the reader. Number two... You have to have a story-worthy problem.
You're so...
Number three.
It's like you're talking to a little kid. You have to have a story-worthy problem. Oh, no. You know what you sound like? Susan Collins, our senator.
Screw you.
All right. Now, and then
well, you know, that one's kind of, I mean, who's going to write a big story? If you write a big story about a woman that lost her, or a person, let's say, a person that lost their car keys.
Yeah.
And you can make a heck of a story out of that. That's cool, but that's not a story-worthy problem in my head.
Unless you can make it a story-worthy
problem. That's what I'm saying. There's always that challenge, right?
Like, what's in the car that you need to get in there? Is her puppy in the car and it's a hot day?
No, baby.
Oh, my God.
Number three, you have to let the reader know what kind of story this is.
And number four is...
And tease that ending out a tiny bit like any good lover does.
So you just want to give the reader a hint of what, how the ending might be. You don't want to tell them the ending, but in that language and the opening lines and the setting and the foreshadowing, you kind of give them a hint that, oh, this is going to be a story about this. So it'll either be like A or B ending or C or D. And then when they get to the ending, they'll be like, oh, that was brilliant.
I never expected that.
No, they foreshadowed that, and I didn't even realize
Oh, until I got there.
Yeah, man. Like that.
Well, sometimes you can't see the shadow, foreshadow through the trees.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that right? Hey, I want to give you props, baby. You made it through that whole long little dialogue you just had, and you didn't even blink an eye at my comment.
What was your comment?
The last number four there.
Yeah?
Yeah, well.
Tease the ending out a little bit?
I said tease that ending out a little bit, just like any good lover is what I think I said.
Yeah, but I didn't care because I was too tired to care.
Oh, come on.
Kind of what happens sometimes, isn't it?
All right.
You know, like, you're just like, oh, I can't argue anymore. Let's just do
Hey, can I just ask you one question before we get back to the podcast because it's still recording?
Yeah. I know it's so beautiful.
You're going through your search history, and I just saw a site that said exotic shoes and costumes.
I don't know what that is. Probably from one of your people.
What? No, this is your computer. What do you mean?
No, but everybody uses my computer. Really?
Really what?
Why would you even be like that, man?
Well, I figured it was like
something. It was probably some cosplay thing we're buying for our kid.
Exotic shoes. You were looking at some ostrich skin loafers for me.
Oh. Shut up. Don't look. It's almost Christmas.
It was just the...
Oh, my God.
What are you doing anyways?
I'm trying to get something important for people, John.
It's going to be an hour long
podcast. No, it isn't. If you stop talking. Ready?
Yeah.
There's this really cool thing where they talk about how in the opening lines... It's not from Les Edgerton. It's just a random creative writing exercise. But the best stories, those opening lines and that opening scene does three things. This is way more concise than Les, right?
Yeah.
It establishes a goal for your reader. It sets the scene for the thing, for the book, mm-hmm. and it develops a character. And those are the three real big components that you only get to hear if you're listening because they're not in the podcast notes that, like, actually make a freaking difference. Set the scene.
Good job.
Show the problem. Show the character. Boom.
Oh,
Yeah, sexy, huh?
Are you buying me Usher skin loafers?
Oh my god, not now. I'm gonna have to send them back.
Alright. Dog tip for life, baby.
So loud. Huh? Yeah, that's so loud.
It's probably not loud on the recording, though.
Yeah, it is. Like, you can see that. Look at the sound waves, babe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's loud. Okay.
Like a spike.
Okay.
Anyways. It's funny. He's like, don't even talk to me about setting the scene. He's like, you see me do it every day. I'm the master of the scene.
And?
And this is how you do it, he says.
Okay.
You gotta be all in. You gotta let him see the... What was the conflict called?
Conflict? Yeah.
Okay, you gotta let him see what you need to do. And I wonder if you're gonna... he threw all the things out there.
Okay.
And I said, show me. So he gets off the couch real slow. And he saunters over towards the pantry. And then he slides down on his belly like he's dead. He looks up at me with pleading eyes.
His pity baby eyes.
Yes, those. Yeah. Which never have an effect on me anyways.
Because you have no heart.
And then he claws the rest of the way over to the pantry and he drools.
He does too.
And he taps on the door with his little claws.
Like one tap.
Yeah. And I was like, listen, you're the book. I'm the reader. I got all the control. So I'm going to decide if you're going to get over your conflict or you're going to fail.
How is this a dog tip for life?
Oh, that was just me having a little...
Oh, my lord. Here's the dog tip for life. Set the scene, establish your goals, yep. Show them your character, and do it right away.
That's what he did.
And that, no, that's scenes. What you did.
No, that's what he
no,
did.
No, that's what you did. You said, I have no heart. I'm not giving you your stuff. Like, here we are by the pantry. All
right, baby. You
and there's
me.
His goal.
I didn't think you'd catch on to my reverse psychology there. Good job. That brain of yours is part of the reason why I love you so much.
I love you too.
And your sexiness is the other part. Hey, thank you for listening. We greatly appreciate your time. Please be sure to like, subscribe, and share this marvelous podcast with all of your friends.
Hey, the music that we've clipped and shortened in this podcast is awesome and made available through the Creative Commons license. The artist and the song is Summer Spliff by Broke for Free. And we have a new podcast.
Loving the Strain.
And another one, Be Brave Fridays. And?
And? I don't know.
Well, they're available everywhere, babe.
Oh, yeah. You can find them on Carrie's Facebook, Carrie's Twitter, Carrie's LinkedIn.
My blog site and Amazon.
If you just look up Carrie Jones Books or Carrie Jones Book.
You can find us.
You can find her all over the internet.
All over.
Yeah.
That sounds creepy.
Well, I was going to make a joke, but I'm not going to, because then we'll have to redo this next week. And Carrie's publishing a new book at the beginning of every month.
Until February, probably.
Yeah?
Yeah, man.
All right. Be sure to check them out.
Yay, us. And yay, you. Thanks for surviving this podcast with us.
That's right. Have a wonderful day.